let's welcome Sam Pimentel. Sam is a professor of mathematical sciences, specializing in glaciology and oceanography at Trinity Western University.
Thank you. Good to see you. Yeah, so I teach mathematics, but my research is in glaciology and oceanography. So for example, I've made contributions developing computational models for simulating glacier dynamics in response to climate change. My title today is There Is No Planet B. You have likely heard this phrase before. It's a play on words based on the phrase, there is no plan B. The sentiment is that there is only one Earth, so humans must try to conserve the Earth's environment, for example, by taking steps to mitigate climate change. My talk will be an attempt to explore this idea, mixing both scientific and theological perspectives. I begin by reminding us that all creation is a gift, loved into being by its maker, a donation of existence from God, who is the source of all reality. As the prologue in John's Gospel says, all things come into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. God's creating and sustaining work is his self-disclosure. Everything in creation was intended by God to be a revelation. In the words of Isaiah, the whole earth is full of God's glory. As fellow scientists, I'm sure you'll agree what a wonderful world it is we get to study. The Christian tradition has held that the manifestation of the divine is through both the natural world and the biblical world. I hope in this talk to use both, to interpret both in and through each other. In this context, in the words of Thomas Berry, to save Earth is an essential part of saving the pristine divine presence. Since the Copernican Revolution, science has seemingly diminished the significance of Earth, no longer the center of the universe, but just another planet in the family of the Sun. It seems the more we learn about the universe, the less important we become. In Genesis, God asked Abraham to come outside and count the stars, if he is able. Well, with modern technology, we have counted. Well, not really counting, more like making a quantitative estimate. And it's estimated that there are over 100 billion stars in the Milky Way alone. Perhaps every star has an average of 1 to 5 planets. There could be as many as a trillion exoplanets in our galaxy alone. This is not including moons. So the diversity of worlds out there, each with its own history, geophysical properties, and composition, is quite flabbergasting. Then there is the purported multiverse. Now not even our universe is special, but just one among a multitude of others. Here are just two examples illustrating this type of thinking, you know, that there is nothing special about our planet. These are just two that I've encountered in the past few months. We live on a mediocre planet in a mediocre solar system and a mediocre galaxy, and there's billions of them. It's a normalish. It's a planet of normalish size and normalish mass, rotating about an average star in a solar system of average everything in a galaxy of innumerably many. But this actually is not correct. Our planet is extraordinarily unique. As far as we know, it is the only place with life, a very special place where biological and geophysical processes have combined to shape both planet and life. Stars like our Sun, type G, make up only 7% of the total stars in the galaxy. Of the now thousands of confirmed exoplanets, less than 4% are between a half and 2 times the Earth's mass. Perhaps we will find some candidates for a so-called Earth 2.0. That is, some other planet out there sharing similar astronomical properties as our own. Perhaps it might even have similar geophysical properties. But it will not be another Earth. Our planet is much more than a rocky world with a certain mass and radius orbiting a G-type star once a year. Our world is unique. There is no Earth clone. Earth's geophysical properties help to protect life, including plate tectonics, a large single moon, a magnetic field strong enough to keep out life-destroying radiation from the sun and outer space, as well as the protective ozone layer. In light of this, the Templeton Prize-winning astronomer Marcelo Geyser has called for a post-Copernican narrative which promotes the preciousness of our planet. Its rarity is the only known cosmic jewel sparkling with a vibrant biosphere. The Creator who formed the Earth did not create it to be empty, but formed it for habitation. No other planet in our solar system approaches the geodiversity of Earth, blessed with water, carbon, phosphorus, all the indispensable ingredients for life. We have an abundance of heavier elements, those that are created through supernova explosions, but which have been incredibly important for life and building civilizations. So-called rare earth elements, which aren't actually particularly rare, but are available at quantities needed for all our digital technologies. Isn't it remarkable that we have these critical minerals necessary for our technological age, just there, readily available. And by the way, these critical minerals will also be indispensable for the technologies that will be essential for our sustainable net zero future. God is deeply invested in this planet. He has a long-running and ongoing commitment to it. The whole biblical story is one which God wants to dwell with us here on earth. He was present in the Garden of Eden. He was present in the desert tabernacle. He traveled with the Israelites out of Egypt. He was present in the Holy of Holies in the temple in Jerusalem. He came himself through the incarnation, where God enters into the geophysical biological realm in human form to dwell with us on this planet. And he continues to journey with us now through the Holy Spirit as we await the great eschatological future with the new Jerusalem descending from above, not to replace the earth, but to transform it once and for all. Finally, the home of God and humanity, the world without end. It's a world where the natural and built environment are in harmony, a garden city. Climate models incorporate all the physical and chemical processes at play in the Earth system. We are essentially constructing a digital twin of the Earth, a computational model of the Earth that simulates planetary dynamics. Perhaps in a way, analogous to those human-made microcosms of creation in the Bible. The tabernacle, for example, was a miniature world portraying an idealized world built as God's abode. God gives Moses a detailed plan for constructing it, whose specifications were based on God's design for the structure of the world. So too, the Jerusalem temple, which is regarded as the representation of the creation. The idea is that the temple replicates God's design. It is supposed to symbolize the world as God's creation. Also, Ezekiel's prophetic vision of the new Jerusalem, with his meticulous concern for correct measurements in the restored temple, representing the order and proportion of the whole creation, here depicted in this wonderful Spanish illustration from 1047. You see the Lamb of God here dwelling with the 12 apostles. We see the angel of the Lord with his measuring rod, ensuring the correct proportions. I don't know if you've read those details in Ezekiel chapters 40 to 42. Most people skip over it. Line after line of meticulous, quantitative details. In some ways, it reminds me of the lines of computer code in a climate model. Climate models are useful tools to help address justice issues, for helping the marginalized and working towards reconciliation. They can and are used to promote well-being, global equity, and safety. For example, weather and climate models can predict severe weather many days ahead to allow emergency services to be proactive in providing aid. Output from climate models are vital for assessing societal vulnerability to climate change on a regional scale, and so for determining the investments needed to make society resilient to changing climate. And this is especially important in the developing world that is inherently more vulnerable. How to prioritize and best administer limited resources requires high resolution simulations of climate. Climate science and developing the technologies needed for our sustainable future is also about our responsibility to future generations. This would include, for example, research on carbon dioxide removal technology so that it might one day be used to remove legacy emissions to address intergenerational justice. From within my own subdiscipline of glacier modeling, we can predict the future fate of glaciers. Current state-of-the-art knowledge is projecting that glaciers will lose between 26 and 41% of their mass in 2100 relative to 2015. Those numbers depend on different emission scenarios. And because most glaciers are small, this corresponds to the disappearance of between 49% and 83% of all glaciers on Earth in 2100. Such a change will have profound consequences for society. In this plot here, it's looking at the loss of glaciers in different regions. So the blue dots are where we have glaciers. This is excluding the ice in Greenland and Antarctica. The different circular paths here are the different possible warming worlds that we could be in, depending on our emissions. And then the black, if it's black, it means higher population. So we see, for example, here that a lot of population here are going to rely on glacier runoff, and so the darker colours are an indication of risk here in this plot. And as you see there, 1.9 billion people live in or directly downstream of mountainous areas. Around 200 million people live on land that is projected to be within the high tide mark by the end of the century under low carbon emissions. All is not well. We have all too often treated this gift of the earth and its resources as a commodity. The earth has become objectified. Think of Jesus' message in the temple precinct when he was furious with those who would make it a marketplace for economic exploitation. And recall again that the temple is a representation of creation. So what must we do to perform the works of God? Just briefly here, this is the plot from the IPCC report, and I'm just going to indicate here two major things. One is the transition to renewable energy, the uptake of wind and solar power, and another is to reduce the conversion of forests and to reforest. According to Genesis, the divine purpose for the Adam is to serve and to protect. this isn't just talking about preservation or maintenance, but to step into the creational possibilities built into the world, to bring the world along towards its fullest possible potential. Climate model simulations can help as tools as we live out our calling as co-creators. Climate science has helped us understand how we live in a shared interconnected world. Climate simulations can be event orientated and link physical and human aspects of climate change. They can enable decision making that can work backwards, as simulations provide a storyline of plausible future events or pathways. These representations and data points empower us to enact a future we desire for humanity and the whole community of creation. If you like, a guide for remaking the world. In the biblical story, humans are put in the garden to till it and care for it. But we were expelled from the garden. However, Jesus does his Father's work. That is the work of creating and sustaining the world, the bestowal of life. Here in this painting here, we see Jesus's appearance to Mary at the tomb, where she supposes him to be the gardener. Well, of course he is the royal gardener. In Botticelli's painting, the gardener king is depicted with a halo and his gardener's hoe. Notice also the entrance there to the Garden of Delight, no longer blocked, but opened again. Jesus says, "As the Father sent me, so I send you." We must also become gardeners, people and work that is aligned with the creation, with the Creator's intentions for the flourishing of creation. Climate models can help us with this primary vocation, a finite participation in God's work. As Christians, we should be fulfilling this vocation to serve and protect Earth in anticipation of its final destiny of becoming the dwelling place of God. Yes, God will one day finish this planetary scale reclamation project, removing all objects in the way of its final destiny. But in the meantime, we should establish in an anticipatory way the new creation to which God is moving history. This is eschatology in the process of realization, and climate simulations can help in this collaborative eschatology. We will shape the future of the planet. Let's choose the optimal path so that Earth may proceed toward the hope that awaits it and us. To love God is to love the world that he loves. Let's rise to the challenge and make a home worthy of God and his image bearers. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have 5 minutes for Q&A. If you can raise your hand, Sam will call on you. Please speak up so that the recording picks up your question. And Sam, if you wouldn't mind repeating the questions.
Sure, I'll do my best. Yeah, go ahead. This picture, okay, so this would be so this is one of those climate stripes where the stripes represent a change in temperature. So it's going out from 1850 up to present day. So you see the warming that we're experiencing already. It's gone from a blue into kind of a pinkish shade. And that's where we stand now. We now have different future possibilities. So a climate model is projecting forward what the temperatures will be out to. In this plot here, it goes out to 2,200. And these different pathways depend on they're called different emission scenarios. So they depend on, because one of the biggest uncertainties, we don't know how the world's going to, whether the world's going to get its act together. what governments will do to reduce emissions. So this is the worst case scenario, represented in consultation pathway 8.5. And you can see things get much, much warmer. Very bad indeed. Fortunately, we know this path is considered not really realistic anymore. So in some sense, we're doing a good job already in that we've avoided this total nightmare, total collapse scenario. These other pathways are perhaps more realistic. And so this would be, this one here is, we have 1.9 degrees warming in 2100. This one here is 2.7 degrees warming by 2100. This one here is 3.1 degrees warming by 2100. So that amount of warming depends on how quickly we get to net zero. Net zero is when the emissions we put out correlate to the emissions that are removed, carbon dioxide emissions. So we're perhaps in here. So we're going to have to live in a world that is much, much warmer. But it's a choose your own adventure. I would hope that we can choose the more optimistic path, which requires mitigation. But as we can see, it's a different world than one we're in now. So adaption as well. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, over the years, I mean, the number of scientists or technologists or entrepreneurs, everyone from Stephen Hawking to Elon Musk has always talked about, well, we need a second planet, you know, we need to repopulate the solar system. Is Elon Musk talking about moving to Mars? You know, people have this view that, oh, we're going to do that. What do you think that will actually, how will that impact, you know, if we're trying to fight climate change?
I just... pie in the sky. I mean, I think that's what my talk was about. There is no real planet B. Yeah.
People talk about it. Do you think that's going to change how people's perception?
Do I think that changes the narrative? I don't know. What do you think? it hasn't for me, but maybe others it has. I don't know.
Yes, you mentioned wind and solar. Well, they will cut down on our emissions. Carbon dioxide in our atmosphere is going to be around for 100 years. How about carbon capture, where we take carbon out of the atmosphere and the effects of that are immediate?
Yes, so there are many people working in the area of carbon dioxide removal technology. It's still very early days, and the question is, I'm not an expert in this area, but there's still questions about whether that's going to be feasible economically and be able to do it at scale. But yeah, certainly that would be an area where we should be investing money to research and hope maybe one day that is possible, that we can remove emissions, carbon dioxide from the atmosphere by capturing it and burying it. Yeah, so some of these scenarios include negative emissions. So that kind of relies on that type of technology coming on board at some point to some extent.
We have time for one more brief question.
Yep, looks like we've got one here.
My question to you, the earlier diagrams you had references to who produced them. This one that we're looking at right now, is that your diagram or is that somebody, is that another
Yes, this diagram, the reference is here. Yeah, sorry, it may be small font here, but I didn't produce this one here, but it's the details of here, which models and data sets they're from are kind of embedded in it. I think these slides will go up on the ASA conference website after if you can't read.
Which agency produced it?
This one is NASA. This is the particular product here.
Thanks.
But yeah. Dr. Hawkins is the production for the actual image. So you can actually get this at formingstripes.com. They have different products you can pick up. All right.
Thank you. Good.